This podcast is brought to you by BetRivers. Download the BetRivers app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Must be 21. Available in Ohio only. Void where prohibited. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports gaming is provided in partnership with Dayton Real Estate Ventures, LLC, DBA, Hollywood Gaming at Dayton Raceway.
If you're a tennis fan, you'll love Betting Weekly Game Bet Match on the BetRivers Network. Whether you're a bettor or just love tennis, you'll enjoy the in-depth analysis each week of the tennis calendar. Subscribe to Game Bet Match today from your favorite podcast provider. If you're a tennis fan, you'll love Betting Weekly Game Bet Match on the BetRivers Network. Whether you're a bettor or just love tennis, you'll enjoy the in-depth analysis each week of the tennis calendar. Subscribe to Game Bet Match today from your favorite podcast provider.
This is the Mark Madden Unfiltered Podcast from the Bet Rivers Network.
Hello, everybody. It is the Mark Madden Podcast here on the Bet Rivers Podcast Network. It's time to talk Penguins. And joining me now is Tim Benz. Tim, the Penguins are, I wouldn't say they're in free fall, but they're certainly struggling. They had that seven-game loss streak, and then they dug out a little bit, had a road stretch of two wins and an overtime loss, but then they got beat pretty good by Toronto at home Tuesday night. And let's go over what I think some of the Penguins' biggest problems are. Number one, I think they're not fast anymore. They think they are, but they're not. And the fact that they think they are makes it even worse.
Where do you think that's manifesting itself the most? Is it manifesting itself getting out of the zone on the attack, on the stretch passes where they excelled in 16 and 17? Or is it manifesting itself in transition defense and coverage in their own zone?
Transition defense.
That's what I think, too.
Definitely. They get confused in transition defense, and that's not due to lack of mobility, but it slows the mobility down even more. Case in point, Toronto's first goal in that loss Tuesday night at PPG Paints Arena, John Tavares was so open in the slot, he seemed confused by it. He had so much time and space, he said, well, where's the pressure coming from? The answer was it wasn't, and he turned and calmly buried the shot.
He looked like, for a minute, a basketball player who every now and then says, isn't somebody supposed to come and try and block this? You know, you see a good shooter get a little bit of a hitch. That's what I thought when I saw him eventually score that goal. But I agree with you. I think that when we think Penguins of 16 and 17, and you've made this point repeatedly, that they keep trying to play like it's still those years, we think Daly, really good skater, good out of the zone. Schultz, good out of the zone. Letang, obviously great skater out of the zone. Carl Hagelin, extremely fast on the forecheck. Phil Kessel, really good skater through all three zones. Sidney Crosby. But I think it's more about, especially in that game against Toronto, getting back on defense, and they were beaten getting into their own zone, thus making it helter-skelter trying to cover their own zone once they got there.
And what makes chasing back all the more difficult, besides their lack of mobility relative to those championship years, is that they take too many chances. Back when mobility could cover up chasing back, they could take chances. But now, an egregious turnover results in egregious opportunities against, like, every time.
And Letang has been great at that over the years. If he makes for as many mistakes that Letang has made gambling that did wind up in his net, he's taken away a ton as well because he could get back. But back then, like I just outlined, they had guys on every pair that could do stuff like that. Schultz could do that. Daly could do that if there was a mistake. Dumoulin back in those days could do that if there was a mistake. Petrie can't do that.
Well, I don't have a problem with Letang taking chances, even though some of those have blown up in the Penguins' face. But case in point, that goal they conceded 11 seconds into the second period against Toronto on a 2-on-1, you know, Pete Pettersson's pinching there. Why does he need to do that there? You know what I mean? And surrender that 2-on-1, you know, to give Toronto the goal to make it 3-0. I just don't get that. Second problem, star players aren't dominant anymore. They're still real good, but they can't take over games.
And if they can't influence the games like they used to, you're going to get nights like they got against Toronto where the Crosby line was a minus 4 or 5.
It was minus 4. It was on the ice for every single goal against.
And I think that's indicative of the point that you're making, whereas you could be on the ice and have a bad night defensively, but if Gensel, Crosby, and Rust are all at the height of their powers, you know, 3-4 years ago, they might put 2 or 3 in the net as well. And then Malkin being at the height of his powers, you win 5-4 instead of losing 5-2.
Yeah, and you're not only having those guys score those goals, you're having them have the puck the corresponding amount, and Toronto not having it, not scoring.
And to our earlier point,
there's only one
puck. Of the zone. Yeah,
right, right. A third biggest problem: the defense ain't good with or without the puck. Pettersson's actually played real well. That miscue against Toronto, duly noted. Letang's still a good defenseman. He's just having a tough go of it. Rutta has been absolutely average, like we thought he would be. Petrie's terrible. I mean, just terrible. Dumoulin, who has been good for many years, is just terrible right now. It just isn't a good defensive core, and that's disappointing because preseason, a lot of people thought that would be one of their strengths.
It's funny on the Petrie front, the way people have reacted to him being a Penguin and what they thought of him before he became a Penguin, because I remember before the decision was made to keep all these guys, a lot of the response was, well, if you don't keep Letang, who do you go out and get? And one name I kept hearing over and over again and thought might be a fit remembering what he was like with the Canadiens was Petrie. But whenever that name was advanced, Penguins fans were like, oh, no, he's too old and too slow now, and he doesn't have it like he used to in that series against the Pens with the Canadiens. And then they went out and got him anyway after they decided to keep Letang, and everybody was looking for the positive as to, well, if he's just the second guy behind Letang.
Turns out the fans were right the first time.
But it's not like an offensive lineman who never subs out. Like, he's got to be on the ice. He's still on the ice a lot and maybe too much. Maybe the gut instinct was right on this one.
Another problem, goaltending rarely gets above average and sometimes dips below average. I think Jari was solid, no better, in the early part of the season. Lately, he's been rotten. And Casey DeSmith is Casey DeSmith, a slightly below average, however legitimate, backup goaltender.
And I was talking to our buddy Josh Yoey about this a little bit, too, as it related to DeSmith and his ice time, the amount of starts that he gets. He's as prone to injury as any of the guys that we've talked about when it comes to injuries in goaltending in Pittsburgh in recent years, if not more so. Jari, Murray, Fleury, DeSmith gets hurt, and you can't run him into the ground and make him a number one. I think, if not for his size...
Oh, I don't think that's the intent, but yeah, he's got a run of games lately.
Yeah, and you know, you can't, and for that reason, Mark, it goes to something you said earlier in the week, which is you can't spook Jari with DeSmith. Like, you can't always cattle prod Jari with DeSmith.
He doesn't believe Casey DeSmith can supplant
That's
him as
I'm
the
saying.
Number one goalie. He knows he's better than DeSmith, so ain't no scaring him.
That's what I'm saying, right.
Yeah, but are you disappointed in Jari, or is this just Jari? I think he's a top 10 goalie statistically. He certainly was last year. I think he will continue to be. But he's like Deontay Johnson. Deontay Johnson gets, you know, catches and yards, but drops a lot. Drops a lot of important passes, doesn't score touchdowns. He's a good receiver, but not a winning football player. I think that Tristan Jari might be a good goalie, but not a winning goalie.
I'll take your Steelers analogy to Jari and one-up you with a Mike Tomlin weighty moments situation, because he's been bad at those. Like, you give away a one-goal lead 3 times, or you give away a 3-goal lead once against Boston, beginning of periods, ends of periods, right after they score, right after you score, they score. Moments like that, I can expect more out of him there.
Well, they gave away a 1-goal lead 3 times in that loss at Montreal.
Right, yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
And one time they gave the lead back after 50 seconds, another time after 40 seconds, and Jari's got to make a save there. He's got to stiffen and be a winning goalie.
I think it was the game against Toronto that they lost on the road the first time they played Toronto. I can't remember exactly which game, but DeSmith was in there, and somebody asked Sullivan afterwards, hey, don't you just need a save in that situation? And the answer was probably yeah, but there were so many other things going wrong during that 7-game losing streak, it didn't feel right to dwell on the goaltending. But within given moments and just under the lens, I think that's what they have been doing with DeSmith, or with Jari, and that's why DeSmith has been playing more. But they're never going to be able to talk themselves into Casey DeSmith being a number one. And if there's this rift going on between how hurt Jari is and what Mike
Sullivan... he's not hurt. He's not hurt.
So you just think he's blowing smoke to cover his own backside? Or
I think he's a dope. Another problem with the Penguins is they're stubborn. They won't adjust or adapt. They won't change the way they play, Tim, not even a little bit. They do against Toronto. They nursed the lead. They managed it well in the third period as opposed to trying to extend it. But then Chad Ruedel jumped in a rush with 5 minutes left and just reminded us that they're the Penguins. And they got beat back on a 2-on-1. But I think Rusty back-checked frenetically and kind of made it a 2-on-1.5. But they're not going to change the way they play at all. If the 7-game losing streak didn't make them think they should at least tweak, then they're just not going to tweak, let alone change significantly.
So then what's more the true statement in your mind? Is it that Mike Sullivan is stubborn, or is it that the players are stubborn and he doesn't wield the authority to make them change their mind anymore?
I think Mike Sullivan's stubborn, which allows the players to be stubborn. And I think Mike Sullivan is assuming what the players want as opposed to running something different by them.
And is there also this trap that he's fallen into that many others have? Bylsma, Therrien, even Johnston to a degree, his predecessor, that because he's won with them as often as he has, he can't do something dramatic to upset the apple cart.
No question. As I've often said, and Mike Sullivan's the winningest coach in Penguins history. He's the he's coached the most games in the franchise's history, and full credit to him. I think he's a great coach. He ain't Scotty. He ain't Herb. He ain't Badger. Those three guys would have had this team adjusting to what they have and what they don't have, adjust to their aging. He would have had them playing, any of those three would have had them playing a totally different way and not taken a team vote over it beforehand.
And coaches were allowed to coach back then more, weren't they? I mean, I know Mario and Yager and a lot of those great vets were.
I don't know. Barry Trotz still coaches. I mean, actually, he doesn't. He's unemployed right now. But there's still John Tortorella, and I wouldn't want him to coach the Penguins. But there are some guys who still impose their will.
But would this team allow that?
I don't know. It might be worth finding out at some point.
Because they seem to be great at listening to the coach when they come on board and then eventually tune them out.
It's a long time ago, but they brought in Kevin Constantine to coach Armory Auger, and it won a division the first year. Constantine burned them out on him in the not too distant future after winning that division.
Right.
But I mean, they might need the equivalent.
Hey, Sullivan was a heavy hand when he first got here.
Yeah, they might need the equivalent of a turnaround coach.
Therrien was a heavy hand when he first got here.
I know. And Tim, real quick, anything else to add? Like any problems I haven't mentioned?
I think one thing they've got to figure out is, especially as Bluger is getting worked back into the lineup, what they want the identity of every line to be and how they want the wingers to play with the centers. Like the mesh point between what they're asking of the wingers to play with the centers. Is it go, go, go all the time with the top two? And then is it grind it out with the third and fourth? Do they want the third? I think they're in another world still of trying to recapture the magic of the HBK line with whoever is the components of that third line. And they don't have near the talent to do that for the third line right now, because there is no Phil when Phil was still a Penguin.
Couldn't agree more, Tim. And there's Jeff Carter ain't Nick Bonino. Jeff Carter is old, and you know, he sounds like he's dragging his muffler. That's how how old and worn out he looks. Will they make the playoffs?
I thought that they would be the last team in. I still think they can't. If you made me pick right now, I still think they'll rally enough to be the last team in.
I do too, but I mean, again, I go back to my original statement. I think their biggest problem is they're not fast anymore, and they think they are. Edmonton's faster, way faster. Toronto's faster. I think most of the teams they play are at least as fast. And let me tell you, they ain't played New Jersey yet. When they play New Jersey, who are really turning a corner with young legs, that's going to be a wake-up call.
Well, weren't they pretty much the same record at this point last year? They need to ride that hot streak. They always get one hot streak. It's can they sustain it long enough to buffer their fatigue at the end and overcome the hole that they dug themselves early?
Talking about the Penguins or the Devils?
No, the Penguins.
Okay, because I think the Devils are going to make it. Although I had Mike Rupp said on my show he thinks the Devils will not make the playoffs.
that this is just a meteor across the sky and they're inevitably going to collapse.
They're still a year away. But then again, I thought last year the Rangers were a year away and they, you know, got to the conference final and beat the Penguins on route.
Well, hey, how many times did you and I talk about this on various outlets? Who was going to be the team that sneaks up from that second cut of Eastern Conference clubs that looks so far away? Would there be a team that could bridge that big of a gap? And would there be a team that would fall that far? Penguins better be careful, because maybe the Devils are the first team in that category, and let's hope the Penguins aren't the second team in that category.
Mark Madden and Tim Benz here on the Mark Madden Podcast on the Bet Rivers Podcast Network. Bet now from anywhere. Tim, since this edition of my podcast has a gambling bent, let's get to some of the NFL games. You got Buffalo -8 at home against Cleveland. Deshaun Watson practicing but not playing yet. Buffalo got a bounce back from that awful loss last week, and they might have been doing 6 feet of snow.
Yeah, I don't even know where they're going to play the game.
Yeah, they're talking about moving the game where to Detroit, play it indoors?
Yes, that's one possibility. I've also heard.
Is that fair to Buffalo?
I don't think so, but then again, Cleveland should be used to that, right?
I mean, I guess 6 feet of snow. I mean, I think they're more worried about you can't get the fans there.
Yes.
Yeah, and the TV cameras in and out. And safety, you're right.
Safety of the players, safety of the tech. Can they get the game broadcast so it can be seen on television? Like, is there going to be literal whiteout conditions that people can't see?
Yeah, but if you're
see?
Not going to play in Buffalo when it snows, what's the point of having a team in Buffalo? Or having, for that matter, home field advantage in the playoffs if the Bills get it?
Well, Mark, then there's something else to talk about with them specifically, because they're talking about a new stadium. Put a roof on it then.
Yeah, people say that would take the romance out of playing in Buffalo. I say put a roof on it. Who do you like in that game?
I like the Bills. I don't like anything over a touchdown or out of touchdown with the weather conditions being as crazy as they are.
And not even knowing where the game is. This is probably a game not to bet on.
Right. I would avoid that until you know the specifics on it.
What did you make of the Bills blowing that game to the Vikings?
It's an alarm. I think it's,
the Vikings are good, though.
Vikings are good. I think they're the second-best team in the NFC. I would love to see a Minnesota-Philadelphia NFC championship game. I think it's an alarm because it shows you that the Josh Allen thing is real, and that if they're going to have to approach this from the standpoint of him not being rested and they're going to try to fight their way through it, you're going to get results like that. And they might find themselves in a wild card position instead of a division champ when we all thought they might get home field throughout.
Oh, Tim, they better start winning games because they're winless in their division now, correct?
Yes, and I wonder at this point, if you look at the AFC standings, you might get three at least AFC East teams in. And if they lose tiebreakers and they're, say, the third team, what do they get? They won't go to Kansas City, but Tennessee? Like, you know, they don't want to go to a good team on the road as a wild card.
Okay, we got the New York Jets staying in that division. The Jets are getting 3.5 at New England. New England has won 13 straight games against the Jets. That's unbelievable. If the Jets are going to be who they think they can be, especially this year, I think they need to win this game. And I think they will win this game. I feel pretty good about them at least covering the 3.5. I'm going to go with the Jets as my pick of the week, and I pick the Jets pretty much every week.
This is a laundry game, though, right? Isn't that what you called it last time?
Yeah, the one set of laundry is used to beating the other set of laundry.
See, I might go the other way on this one and maybe buy it down to 2.5, get it under a field goal, and Patriots figure out a way to squeak out with a field goal win in overtime or late in regulation.
We got Philadelphia -6.5 at Indianapolis. That is a sexy game because the Eagles just lost their first game. They just lose to Washington. The Commanders end the Eagles' 8-game winning streak just like they ended the Steelers' 11-game winning streak a couple years back. And, of course, you got the Jeff Saturday hire and Bill Cowher losing his mind and people losing their minds at Bill Cowher.
What'd you think about the reaction to that?
The reaction to what Bill said?
To what Bill said,
like,
yeah.
Like, Pat McAfee said that Bill Cowher should shut the F up. Well, Pat McAfee played with Jeff Saturday, correct?
Yes, they overlapped.
So what's he going to say?
He's his buddy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, and that's the one thing about Pat's show and about a lot of other shows that are, you know, the sensation in today's media. They operate on the buddy system, period. And, you know, Pat does, and, you know, I'm not even sure he'd deny that.
I looked at what Cowher said, and I seized on that last thing he said in his rant, which was, even if this works out, it's a travesty. I thought, like, why did he phrase it that way? Like, he was so intentional.
No, I know what he means.
I know what he means, too, but
I'll give an example. When the Penguins let Fleury go to Las Vegas in the expansion draft, and they kept Matt Murray, that was the right move to make. Murray was younger, cheaper, he just won two cups. It just didn't work out. Sometimes the wrong move works out, sometimes the right move doesn't.
I think he was also sort of saying, like, covering for the coaching empire by putting that out there, which was, if this does work out, nobody else should ever do it. Like, just because it worked out with Jeff Saturday in Indianapolis and Ted Lasso in England, that doesn't mean that you should do it too. There's still a right way and a wrong way to do this, damn it, and don't do it the wrong way.
It also shows a way around the Rooney rule, might I add.
So you say, like, do that, know who you want in advance, fire the coach before the season's over.
Because the Rooney rule doesn't apply to interim coaches. And then if Jeff Saturday does well enough to be retained, I don't think anybody's going to be demanding that they interview coaches of color, you know, in a really phony, like, you know, Brian Flores could tell you, a phony attempt to satisfy the Rooney rule, even as you know who you're going to hire.
How transparent have these bad fake interviews been then? Like, if I had it in my mind that I was going to skirt the Rooney rule and I knew who I wanted in advance, I would go above and beyond to make the minority candidates that are being given the short end of the stick here, make them feel like they're not. They must not even care to put up a front.
Tim, who was it? Did Flores interview with Denver?
You're talking about the Brian Daboll mess up? Is that what you mean?
No. Didn't Flores interview with Denver and Elway just made a sham of the interview?
He said somebody
was like disheveled and drunk or
hungover. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll be honest though, Tim. If I owned an NFL team, I would hire exactly who I wanted. I wouldn't pay any attention to the Rooney Rule aside from fulfilling whatever you have to do, which is just do lame ass, fake ass, phony ass interviews.
I would give it as hard of a sell as I could.
Yep.
But at the same time, I'm not going to hire someone.
It's my team.
That I don't
I'm
think...
a billionaire.
Sure.
I want to succeed. So who would you take in that game then?
We're talking about the
Philly
Colts.
And
yeah.
Indy.
Philly's my bet of the week.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, I think the Jeff Saturday thing was a fluke against the one team he could beat in that situation.
Adrenaline.
I think there was adrenaline. I think there was a buy-in immediately. I want to see what that feels like when the chips are down. I can't think of a more polar opposite team right now, the way that they're performing, that last game aside, than Philadelphia to the Vegas Raiders. So I'm going to go with Philadelphia, and that is my pick of the week at minus. If it stays under a touchdown, that's my pick of the week.
And then finally, the Bengals are 4-point favorites at Pittsburgh. I'm not ruling out the Steelers winning this game outright because I think the Bengals are, you know, struggling. They're 5-4. They're clearly having a Super Bowl hangover. At least they had to start the season. They totally reconfigured their offensive line, but somehow it still isn't that much better. They're missing Ja'Marr Chase, but I still like the Bengals in this game to win and to cover because even though they're missing Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins would be the number one receiver on a lot of teams. And Tyler Boyd would be the number two, maybe even number one receiver on a lot of teams.
And I would suggest, if I was in that Bengals coaching room, I would suggest to remember that, especially against the Steelers cornerbacks, who granted played well last week, but I still think are vulnerable. T. Higgins has done some good things against the Steelers over the years. Mixon has always been good, but not great, so, occasionally great against the Steelers. I just hope from a Bengals perspective, if you're betting on them, that they don't come in thinking we got to do what we did against the Panthers against the Steelers. Well, no, you don't. You can do it any way you want against the Steelers, really. I know they're a little spooked by TJ Watt coming back because Watt's been great against them. He's always great against those AFC North teams. I think the Bengals cover. I said 26-19 as a final score. I might be a little high in the scoring there, but I do think the Bengals cover, and I think it's at least 4. Remember, Mark, as well, the Steelers left 6 points in the field in that game against the Saints. For as much as it felt lopsided, that kicking thing could be a real issue if you're looking to be on a hair there when it comes to the point spread.
I got to mention Kenny Pickett. It struck me the other day, and I said this on my show. Okay, Jerry Dulac says Pickett has no authority to make audibles at the line. Ever. Okay? He's managing the game. He's already been turned into a game manager. He never throws the ball in the middle or down the field. Why'd you draft him?
And why is it so important how advanced and smart he is then? And polished,
yeah.
Allegedly.
NFL ready. I mean, aren't they? I am of the opinion Mike Tomlin has mangled the quarterback situation as badly as a coach possibly could since the day Ben retired.
I keep going back to the New England game when this conversation comes up, whether it was Mitch Trubisky or Kenny Pickett, their alleged lack of authority to be able to check into what they want at the line of scrimmage. When you've got two guys in Malik Reed and Alex Highsmith saying that on that final drive for New England, Mac Jones was getting to the line and checking into whatever run play he knew would work against their defensive set. Why can Mac Jones do that, but Kenny Pickett and Mitch Trubisky can't?
Tim, I got to get my World Cup picks in. We talked about it last week. My official World Cup bet is bet on France. They're plus 750. I like their depth up front with Mbappe and Benzema. And my number two bet is England at plus 950 because they were in the World Cup semifinals 4 years ago. 3 years ago, I think the pandemic pushed it up, pushed it back a year. They were in the finals of the European Championship and lost to Italy on penalty kicks a couple years back. They will either get to the final four or totally muck it up, totally, you know, collapse. And there's no middle ground with England. But those odds are good enough for me to take a flyer.
Who's the favorite?
Brazil.
And at what?
I think 350, but I'm not.
Oh, you said France was 7 or 750?
750.
Yeah, that sounds good to me, actually.
Yeah, Brazil and Argentina are favored, the two favorites. And I just don't. I mean, you can't count out either. I think Messi's too old. I think Neymar will ruin Brazil with his ego.
How, if at all, does the venue kind of play into any of this?
Well, funny you mention that, Tim. I think there's a pall over the World Cup. I mean, stadiums are built by slave labor. There's already ports of censorship on the media by security. It has, and I don't say this lightly. I'm not being, you know, smarmy. It has a Berlin Olympics type of feel.
Oh, I thought about that. Yeah, I mean, like, there's been a lot of articles already about the sports washing that's going on.
And yeah,
the Berlin Olympics were maybe the first and best ever example of that. I don't think that's too far of an analogy to stretch at all.
Yeah, and it also has a feel like something really bad could happen there.
All the way down to how those stadiums were built. Weren't some of these stadiums, like, aren't they, I'm not making a joke here, like, literally collapsible? Like, aren't some of these stadiums, they're just going to fold them up and send them to other places? Some of the venues?
I hadn't heard that. That's kind of creepy.
I heard that.
Kind of worrying.
I heard that today on DVE, actually. They had somebody on talking about that.
I got to get this in about soccer, too. Did you see that the Maradona World Cup ball from 1986?
Oh, $2.4 million.
It got sold at auction for $2.4 million. That's the Hand of God ball. But here's the thing that people don't remember, and it shows the paradox of Diego Maradona. He also scored arguably the best goal in World Cup history with that ball in the same game. He dribbled through England's whole team and slotted it in. Tim, he beat one guy twice. I mean, his dribbling, like, he went 70
yards.
I've
seen it before, yeah.
I can't walk 70 yards. And Maradona dribbled the ball through 70 yards, but again, that's the paradox of Maradona.
Now, nowadays, or even back then, did they just use one ball? Or do they kind of switch it out, like, say, a football or a lacrosse ball?
Like, back then, if the ball went out, they just threw the same ball back in. Now, if the ball goes out, there's a ball on the sidelines. They get it back in quicker, you know, if the same ball isn't handy. But this ball was used for the 90 minutes. You know who had it? The referee. The referee just picked the ball up and left because he's in charge of the ball.
And back then, I imagine the instantaneous, how do I get this for memorabilia phenomenon hadn't hit yet, right?
Apparently not, because it's how many years later? 1986. Tim, I know you're not a soccer buff quite the level I am, but who would you rate as the best soccer players ever? Give me a top three. I do a top three on my Tuesday podcast. Let's do a top three today. Top three soccer players ever.
I would go, partially because I saw more of him, Pele, and then Maradona, and then Messi.
You're close to mine. I have Maradona number one.
Okay.
I have Pele number two. I have Ronaldo three, just slightly ahead of Messi, because I just think Ronaldo's a better athlete. Although, boy, the commotion he's causing now, burying Man United as he tries to get out the door there to go someplace else if anybody else wants him. I mean, Tim, did you see he criticized United? I mean, really, really buried the club and its current management in an interview with Piers Morgan. He's part of a big mural on the wall of the side of Old Trafford. Man United Stadium, not anymore.
They took him off.
Took it right down. Because honestly, you see, and that's what's great about soccer, Tim. No player is bigger than the club. Ever. Ever, 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 ever. It just doesn't work that way.
Is that like the equivalent of taking Derek Jeter out of Monument Park at Yankee Stadium?
Yes. That's exactly what it's like. Although Ronaldo was more of a Madrid legend. He was a young guy at United, but he won a lot there and established himself there. But still,
who was the German soccer player you were talking about in this top five? You said you had the top five list. You mentioned a German soccer player in this.
A current German soccer
player?
No,
a former German soccer
player. Beckenbauer?
Yes, maybe that's who.
Yeah, Beckenbauer was awesome.
Okay.
Beckenbauer, he's not in my top three, though, for the purpose of this list. And the reason I have Maradona over Pelé, Pelé never left Brazil to play club soccer. He played for Santos there, and they won a billion. But it's, you know, that league was not, I mean, it's a great league, but it's not, you know, La Liga or, you know, Serie A or the Premiership. Maradona went to Barca and kind of washed out there. Like, there was a lot of conflict there because back then you could only have three foreign players on in Spain, and you could only use two at any one time. So there was, like, this constant, you know, thing over who should play of the three. And, you know, how could it not be Maradona? But sometimes it wasn't, and, of course, he didn't like that. But Maradona went to Napoli in Italy. They never won before. They never won since. And they won the league twice while he was there. I mean, he just transformed the club, the city. He got involved with the mob, with cocaine. He did it all. He did it all.
His documentaries are more interesting, so he's better than Pelé.
Jovista Maradona and Mama, I'm in love. And like I said, Ronaldo, more marketable. I'll take him over Messi for marketing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Guy never ages. Although, did you see the interview with Piers Morgan?
No, I didn't. I didn't see it.
Came off as a whiny, spoiled, me-first brat, which, of course, is exactly what he's always been. But now when your skills are fading some, although he's still the top guy. I mean, he's going to be the guy who leads the line for Portugal at the World Cup. I just don't think they're going to do much. They did win. Another thing, too, they did win the European Championship with Ronaldo.
Okay.
Which is, you know, for Portugal to win that, that's a big deal. That said, the Argies have won, what's it, Copa South America, whatever the equivalent is in South America. They won that with Messi, too, so maybe that kind of saws it off a little bit.
Who's the best American soccer player?
Doesn't matter.
Got a top three or anything like that for them?
Ever?
Yeah.
Tim, I'm not even sure I could come up with, you know, I mean.
Donovan?
Went to Europe and did nothing.
Not but, Pulisic. He's not in the top three.
No. Well, I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I don't know. I don't have much regard for any of them. Because if they were if they were athletic, they'd be playing football.
Yeah.
You know, like, if Cristiano Ronaldo grew up in America, he'd be a strong safety for an NFL team. For sure. We're the only country in the world where the best athletes don't play soccer, and yet somehow we con ourselves into believing that winning the World Cup is possible.
I just look forward to the day where the Steelers would trade a first-round pick to get Ronaldo.
How about they play Iran in the third game? Talk about your traditional rivalry. I mean, they play Wales first. By the way, the line on that Wales game.
Are we going to call that the Argo game, by the way, or what?
Not bad. The Wales game, there's no odds on the England game yet, which is the second game.
Okay.
But the USA-Wales game, it's one of those games we've talked about for soccer betting where every bet is an underdog bet. The USA is plus 170. Wales is plus 200. The draw is plus 200. And Wales is good. They got Gareth Bale, who's a little bit past his prime, but still very good. He's playing in MLS now. They got Nico Williams, a former Liverpool player, plays for Fulham now at right back. And other than that, I don't know who they have. So I just mentioned Nico because I kind of liked him when he played for Liverpool. But
so they sort of like that Slovakian team that went real far in the Olympics. Did Slovakia go to the medal round?
Oh, God, I don't know, Tim. Now you're testing my... Over.
Well, they had a couple stars and then a bunch of guys that the
NHL. Who, Wales?
No, yeah.
Oh, no, they're not even that good.
Oh, okay.
But the thing is, they're probably on a plane with the U.S. And I think for the U.S. to have a hope of making the knockout round, they have to beat Wales.
That is interesting. About how can you do the math to warp that in your favor if every bit is an underdog bet? There's probably a way
you
to do that.
You can't, Tim. That's why I'm down $300 betting the Premier League. That's Tim Benz. I'm Mark Madden. This is the Bet Rivers Podcast Network.
Catch new episodes of Mark Madden Unfiltered every week. Available on the Bet Rivers Network, BetRivers.com, and wherever you find your podcasts.